Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is Triangulation, episode 359, for Friday, August 10th, 2018, Sal Segoyan. Triangulation is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans, introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/triangulation. It's time for Triangulation, the show where we get together with some of the most interesting people in technology and spend an hour getting to know them, answering questions from the chat room and having a generally good time. This is kind of my favorite show of the week because I get to really, you know, get down with it. And this week is going to be the best ever because it's a dear friend. In fact, the guy we started MacBreak with way back in 2005, I think we figured out. Oh, ought five, as we say. Sal Segoyan is here. The king of Apple automation. Actually, automation in general now. Great to see you, Sal.
Great to see you, Leo, my good friend. How are you?
A question. Is that the same beret since 2005, or have you updated it since?
No, I think there's been one update.
It's your trademark. You got to wear it now, man. You can't take it off.
It's become that, hasn't it,
yeah,
over the years?
It's a great trademark. The Zorba the Greek of automation, we call it. So great to see you. And you were saying, Naomi Pierce, who's your wife in here, and love Naomi too, said, what are you guys going to talk about? And I said, and you thought I might have been joking, perhaps. I have no idea. I have no notes for this conversation. But I do have to, I think our audience would want me to start with, and you say if you don't want to talk about it, but what the hell happened at Apple? So for years, we knew Sal as the guy. In fact, you told some great stories about convincing Steve Jobs, for instance, that automation, that AppleScript was vital to macOS, right?
Yeah. My history at Apple was accidental, really. Before I got to Apple, I was making a living playing music and writing automation scripts for big companies.
You look like a jazz performer. What kind of music did
I would
you play?
Jazz, basically. That's what it was. I lived in Charlottesville, Virginia. I worked on the downtown mall at a small place called Pixels. It was a print service bureau. And when I wasn't there during the day running, you know, hundreds of jobs coming through and using Quark Express and PageMaker and stuff, I'd be out playing at night.
Nice.
And so I had a very interesting life like that. And as being in the print industry, we get hundreds of jobs coming through. And you have to review each one and figure out what's going on with it. Is the file set up correctly and those kind of things. And I was always looking for ways to automate that process. So I got into, you know, working with Quark extension developers. And that helped automate it some. But then in 1993, I saw an ad in the Apple developer brochure about this amazing English-like language that could control the action of the computers and the apps that are on it. So I sent in the money, and I paid an extra $15 for a scriptable finder, which came on like a 400K floppy, right?
Was this from Apple or
this
a third party?
Apple. This was from Apple. And so I got the AppleScript disk, and at that time, the app that was really powerful that was scriptable was Quark Express.
Which was used for page layout.
Everybody, yes.
It took over from PageMaker.
Yeah,
all this PageMaker was the
over.
Dominant program. But right about that time, Quark kind of took over.
Dave Shaver and Ralph Risch had implemented Apple event scripting, AppleScript, in Quark Express with Tim Gill's help.
Right.
And so I remember it was in the evening, it was after the day, and I was sitting there alone at night, and I'm going through this trying to figure out what this is all about. And it says, okay, there's a dictionary, and this should be called a box, and then, okay, it has properties, all right? So I write my first script. So I selected a box.
And you've not been a programmer in the past.
No, no programming at all.
Yeah.
No programming at all. And I drew out a box, and my first script that I ever wrote was set the color of the current box to blue.
You remember it.
I remember it. It's infused in my brain. And I ran that, and that box changed.
Boing.
And that I
really,
changed.
Yeah. Yes.
At that point, I let go all my clients. I had a business doing, you know, desktop publishing, right. design business.
Right.
And I let go all my clients, and I just focused on learning everything I could possibly learn about AppleScript for, like, months.
Was that just because you loved it, or did you see a... Like, you see how it could be used? What was it that got you?
It hit a profound concept within me. It opened up a profound concept that has stayed with me my entire professional life, which is that the power of the computer should reside in the hands of the one using it. I don't have to go to a developer and say, please, can you make this so that this does this? Or can you alter your application so that I can do this? It put all that power in my hands. And for me, that was an awakening. And after that, I started developing automation around the print industry because I was in it. And I expanded out into other industries, too, like media production and video production to automate them. And Apple noticed me because I was writing books on the topic, and I'd be at the same trade shows as them. And my audience would be the Apple employees standing there watching this.
Because they probably didn't know all the things you could do with this stuff.
There was maybe a handful of guys that knew it was in the system, but they would stand there, and eventually they started asking me, would I join? And I said, well, why should I join? I'd take a 50% pay cut to work for you. I don't want to do that. And then over a period of time, about a year, it was a group effort by Shafa Syed, Bamandara, and Guy Kawasaki, and a couple other people, and Chris Espinosa. They got me on board at Apple, and I joined at, like, the worst time.
Steve had left.
Yeah. I joined in January of 97. So Apple had the word beleaguered tattooed to them.
This is the beleaguered years.
And if you look at where I was hired in January. And at one point, Apple put out these boards on campus that all the employees could see. They had a list of every Apple employee and when in order of their hiring. And so there was like 13 boards around campus, and everybody was walking around looking for their name, right? And I was over here, like,
you're
on board number two. And if you look after my name, then it's like Craig Fegarini and,
oh, the new,
and
the
Avi
new crew.
And all the next guys.
The next
came
guys.
In. Yeah, so I was like the last hire, one of the last hires.
Under Gil Emilio.
Yes, yeah. Before everything opened up.
Yeah, yeah.
And so automation to me came from a very personal basis. I was always looking at automation from the aspect of getting stuff done,
right,
in the real world. Right. And that knowledge about what customers needed and how it gets used in the end was essential to my role at Apple,
yes,
when I came on board,
yes,
to protect this technology. Because at that time, AppleScript was not part of the operating system. It was an add-on thing. It wasn't
understand
part
this.
Of it.
So Apple Events, what is Apple Events?
Apple Events is a messaging architecture.
Any GUI operating system is message-based. The operating system just kind of sits in this loop and waits for messages to come in. You moved a mouse, you clicked something.
An event loop,
yes, they call it.
Mm-hmm.
And so these little messages coming into the event loop, those are Apple Events?
Yes. Okay. Yes. So an application could send an event to another application.
That's interesting.
Or to itself, or to the operating system. So an application could say, tell Finder to close every window. And the Finder would do that. It would get this message,
wow,
translate that, and then
it understood what that meant.
It understood what that meant. And so using that technology, you can accomplish incredible things.
That's
with the computer.
It's extremely powerful.
Totally.
But there wasn't a user interface to that. That was something that applications had to use the base built-in ROM capabilities, the API, to do.
Well, there is an interface for it. It's through the script editor. Every scriptable application.
When did that start?
That back in System 7.
They had an editor.
All of this was designed back in System 7.
So they were thinking, okay, Chris Espinoza and company were thinking, okay, it'd be nice if users could get a hook into this and basically write an application that was a series of events.
Yeah.
Right? But it was a script.
It was kind of like from the idea of HyperCard, where you had the HyperTalk language.
HyperTalk looks a lot like AppleScript.
Yes, and it was AppleScript was thought of like a system-like HyperTalk language that normal people could use to control the action of applications and the system.
It was very, and I think some programmers didn't like it. It bugged me because I learned programming languages first, and it was so much like English, where you have a subject and an object and a verb. It was like, well, that's not how you program.
It's funky, right?
It's funky. And it was hard for me to get used to it just because I had been taught to do something completely different.
You find, over the years, I found that most engineer types were kind of confused by AppleScript because it didn't follow the document dot blip blah, dot colon slash.
But it was much more human.
Much more human.
Yeah.
So I could say.
So that was always in there. Since System 7.
Yes, it became an official part of the operating system at System 8.
This is still before your time.
No, I came in at System 7.5.
Okay.
And we were going to deliver 8. And we had a small team, a small automation team at the time, and Chris Espinoza was part of that team. I worked for marketing. I actually reported to Phil Schiller. I did not report to the engineering world.
So they didn't want you to write scripts. They wanted you to talk to pre-press guys in the language they understood.
Well, that's interesting. Actually, that's not how it worked. Apple had a unique way of how apps were created at Apple that made them different than any other company. And it was this special relationship between a product manager who reported to marketing world and the engineering manager reported to the engineering world. So you could not ship a product unless both of those people signed off on it. So they couldn't ship a product without my approval.
You were on the marketing product.
I was on the marketing side. My role was to bring my experience and my awareness of customer needs to the foreground and develop a set of features that I thought would address the issues.
It's interesting. They've kind of returned to that model with the latest hardware. They've even said, we brought in experts in the domains to sit there and help us design the next Macintosh.
Getting input is invaluable.
You've got to.
So I would present engineering with, this is what I think we should be doing. And then engineering would look at that and go, well, we can't give you this and this because we don't have the resources, but we can give you this and this, and we also have this. Uh-huh. Would this help? And then we would go back and forth and come to the solution.
So it was a negotiation.
It was a negotiation, and that's what a product manager did.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I would take that, and I would represent it to the world and figure out how do we document that, how do we market it. But then, as we just said, I came at the time when Apple was falling over.
Shelley
Winters was doing the stroke down the hallway. There was columns falling over. It was like, it was Poseidon Adventure, right? So everybody had to take on like 4 or 5 jobs.
Yeah, wow.
So I was basically the developer representative. I was the guy writing the scripting code.
Wow.
I was the guy writing the documentation. I did the website.
You must
I presented
have been going
to people.
Crazy.
Well, you know, it was Wild West time, but that's gave us a level of freedom and independence that allowed them to create, allowed product managers to create a horizontal link.
You owned the whole stack. You owned that whole stack was yours.
Yes, and we were free to move laterally through the organization.
Interesting.
There wasn't the stove piping that you have now where you have vertical parts of the organization. A product manager, I spent as much of my time over in retail or in the iTunes as I did in other parts. I would be in engineering one day. I'd be working with the iTunes group one day. I'd be working over here. And those personal relationships between those organizations focused through a product manager is what enabled the great software and enabled Apple to turn around quickly.
That's interesting. Yeah.
When I first got there, I got called into this meeting in the boardroom and Steve was here, and I was sitting next to Chris Espinoza, you know, and I'm like, wow, what am I doing here? But apparently Steve was reviewing everything, and he was talking about it, and he goes, and he laid it out to us right there in that meeting. He said, we're going to beat these people, and we're going to beat them by moving faster. We're going to out-innovate them, outmaneuver them, out-deliver them.
Who was them? Microsoft?
Everybody that we had to compete
everybody.
With. Right? Everybody we had to compete with. Everybody that thought we were going to die.
Yeah.
And he had a fire in his eyes, right?
He wanted to save Apple.
Oh, yeah. And so
actually, he felt very strongly that Apple had screwed the pooch for the last 10 years. And thank God they brought me back. Right? Didn't he?
I'm glad he got back, too, because it changed everything.
Yes.
So I turned to Espinoza and I said, when was the last time you were in a meeting with Steve? And, you know, if you
Espinoza
know, Chris,
is one of the original Chris, Mac engineers. I mean,
he has a brain that's like a machine. And he goes, oh, it was like April 13th, blah, blah, blah. And I said, so what's the difference? And he goes, they're not trying to get rid of him.
Big difference.
So it's a big difference.
Now, he was at that point the CEO, and they kept pretending that this is just temporary, I'm advising. But they had acquired Next. And, you know, we've seen recently.
Well, this was actually before that.
This was even before they acquired Next.
This is when he just got back.
What, they brought him as a consultant?
I don't even know if he had taken on a specific title.
They said, come in, Steve, we're dying, please help.
And change the company. And at that time, Apple was like a lot of companies where you had little fiefdoms where, you know, people were in charge of their little thing and they weren't working as a cohesive unit. Right. And Steve was a very strong king.
He was a holistic guy, too. He thought it had to be a whole. It couldn't be little
And he just
bits.
Said, well, you know, this is where we're going. I'm sorry your stuff's going to get cut, but it's getting cut. If you don't want to do that, fine. Get somebody else. We're going this way. And the product managers, like myself, had a role to play in that mobility of turning that ship.
Yes.
Guys like Mitchell Weinstock, who was the product manager for QuickTime, masterful at giving it at marketing a technology way beyond just him doing that. He looked like an entire organization of 50 people.
Wow.
You know, you had Richard Ford, who was handling all the network stuff. And he was the master at running things through the system. He could get them through the system very quickly. And then there was Eric Zelenka, who was one of the most amazing product managers I ever met. The guy took over Mac OS X server and just turned that in from a raw lump of coal into this fantastic thing. He was consummate inside guy. So being a product manager was like, there was only a handful. There was like maybe 10 of us in the company at the time.
So you're at this meeting. All the project managers are there. And Steve, at this point, is he
wielding? Product manager.
Product.
Yeah.
Is Steve at this point wielding an axe?
Well, Steve had started wielding the axe since he got there. I mean, every day you would hear people fall off the roof. It'd be like, splat, all day long. You know, he would work his way through, you know, it was the cluster of buildings.
But it needed to be done.
Yeah. And the first time I met Steve, we got in a fight.
Well, this is the story I heard, was that he didn't think much of what you were up to.
No, it wasn't that he didn't think much of what
you needed to justify your existence.
Yeah, so Steve basically fired our vice president in front of us, and you know, called all of product marketing into town hall, and our VP says goodbye, and then Steve starts, you know, raving on us, telling us that
you're idiots.
It was easier when we were 100 times better than Windows, but now that we're not, you don't know what to do. And so I said to him, the first words I ever said to Steve were, no, you're wrong. And he turns, spins around, and he looks at me and he goes, and you are?
This is in town hall.
In town hall.
In front of everybody else.
Yeah.
And you stood up and said, no, you're wrong, to Steve Jobs.
Yeah. My first words to Steve were, no, you're wrong. And he spins around and looks at me and says, and
Who are you?
I said, I'm Sal Segoin. I'm the AppleScript product manager. No, you're wrong. My technology is many times better than Windows. And he goes, well, that's not what, you know, they've been telling me. And then we went at it. in front of everybody, I look over and there's my boss, like Peter Lowe, looking at me commit employee seppuku in front of everybody.
Well, what's your choice, right? You either you convince him this is a great product, or you don't. You're not going to be working there anyway.
So what Steve was doing, it turns out, so we fought for a couple minutes, and then he goes on to something else.
And what are you saying? Well, like, give me an example. Like, is he saying?
Well, he said, nobody's using this stuff. And I said, that's absolutely wrong. I said, all the companies are depending on this. We use this. All of our big customers, small customers use this. And he goes, well, that's not what I've heard. And I said, well, you guys are lying to you. And so, you know, we just went at it.
I guarantee you. That's exactly what he wanted from you.
It was. What he was looking for, he was being like this on purpose to see who in the room
would
push back on him.
Yeah.
And, you know, after that...
Did you know that, or did you see red? What was it that gave you permission to say, Steve, you're wrong?
Well, I figured it this way. You know, Apple asked me to join. I might be a dog on my square yard of dirt, but, you know, I know everything. Piece of that square yard, and you're on my square yard of dirt, and I'm going to bite your leg off.
And I know what I'm talking about.
And he was wrong.
And you need to hear this.
And so he went on to something else, and then he tested somebody else, and I figured out, oh, he's testing to see who he has to work with. And everybody that fought him back stayed, and the rest of the people left, right? Basically is how it worked. And so after that, he liked me.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
I would too.
So, but
you want guys that are going to tell you the truth. You don't want some schmuck who's going to tell you what you want to hear.
Yeah. And Steve got automation very quickly.
Did he?
Oh, absolutely. Steve was an ally and an advocate of automation. He didn't necessarily understand all the different details about writing the code and everything, but he understood its importance and its role and why it was necessary for customers to have that option. And while he was there, we got resources that we needed consistently. He made sure that we had the resources we needed to advance the technology with each system release.
Yes.
And
it did. It got better and better.
It got better and better. And there was many times when, you know, he and I would have conversations about stuff. There was one time he had it in his mind about, there was some particular thing about AppleScript and languages that was triggering his mind. And he would keep coming back to me with emails and stuff. So one day I'm sitting in the lunchroom, I'm standing in line getting my pasta spaghetti, right? And I'm standing here and I hear this voice at the back of my head. So what are we going to do about blah, blah, blah? And I turn around and it's SJ and he's like right in your face fired with 20 questions. He goes, so what are we going to do? And I'm responding, right? Like, and I finally go, Steve, my pasta's getting cold. And it was like he just noticed it for the first time that I was actually holding food. And he goes, oh, I'm sorry. But he was focused on it. He was passionate about it. I didn't always win the arguments. There were some times he took other people's, you know, he would referee an argument between me and another a guy over something about automation, and I didn't always win, but Steve always supported me and always supported the automation team, and that's why we were able to deliver Automator, and we were able to take AppleScript native code. We were able to deliver AppleScript Objective-C. Those kind of things were possible because from management, we had this buy-in, and that was important. That was really crucial and very important.
So we're talking to Sal Segoyan. That's all I have to say. You know who he is. Well, if you didn't, you know now who he is. He's the guy who told Steve he was wrong, and he was right. You were right. He was wrong. What's OSA?
OSA is the Open Scripting Architecture. AppleScript is a language that works in OSA. So does JavaScript. The JXA, or JavaScript for Automation, is a peer of AppleScript in macOS. So you can write the same kind of Apple event scripts using JavaScript or AppleScript.
Is OSA specific to Apple?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Apple Events is specifically to Apple.
So OSA is a way of describing kind of the fact that there's a hook to these Apple Events directly.
Yes.
And then you could, are there other OSA languages besides JavaScript?
Oh yeah, there's Apple Script. There was an OSA Python, OSA Ruby.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Are they still in use or?
Somewhat. Sometimes, yeah. There was a scripting bridge put in place for different languages.
So the bridge is effectively an API to the Apple Events.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And this API is open enough that people could hook in, you know, they'd write a library for Python or write a library for Ruby that would take advantage of this API. And they allow you to send any, is there a set of system events that you can say? You can't create an arbitrary system event.
Every language, every application that is scriptable carries internally a dictionary.
It has its own events.
All the different objects, the classes that it has, what their properties are, what commands they accept, and the different parameters. So you can go to the script editor or script debugger, a scripting app, editing application, and choose open dictionary and open the Keynote dictionary, and you can see, oh, okay, there's a document, there's a slide, there's a text box, there's an image, and each one of those has different properties. Oh, there's a thing called a transition. Oh, it has a property that's duration, okay? And so
all that means it's scriptable. All of that means it's scriptable.
All
of
that means
that
it's scriptable.
That is so brilliant.
Totally.
And such a useful tool.
Absolutely.
And it kind of always bugged me that it wasn't better known. But you always reassured me, don't worry, the people who need, there are people who know about this and are using it.
Yeah.
It pre-press is a big area.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people using automation.
Oh, video production is huge.
Right.
I got to spend about 4 or 5 weeks with Showtime in New York. My friend Dirk Van Dahl was VP at Showtime. And they would do these on-air menus, you know, those 20-second things of, next, Bob discovers America. What's this? You know, it's Thursday, blah. And when we first looked at the problem of creating 1,800 of those, there was a room with four guys sitting back-to-back with Media 100 systems creating these things, these 20-second promos by hand. And Dirk said, can we take this spreadsheet of what's coming up and turn that into an automation? And we did. What we did is we took the spreadsheet, read the spreadsheet, figured out what the titles would be, when it was going to be, and then there was an audio segment that had all of the overdubs. This guy that recorded those would sit there in the studio and he would record them in a row. They just turned it on. He would do 20 seconds, take 10 seconds to cough, then do another 20 seconds and stuff, and he would do all of them. And so the script would extract the 20 seconds from each one of them, get the appropriate video background, whether it's one of the 13 different channels from FX and all the different things, put the appropriate video background, overlay the text that it took and made in Photoshop and Illustrator, bring it in, put it a mask on it, an alpha channel on it, fade it in and fade it out at a certain time, put the audio back in, and then it would put all of this on a timeline, and they could scrub the timeline to see that everything worked out. And then they would run another script that would export all of it to high res on the server for showing, and another copy onto another server for viewing on a web page.
Sweet.
And all of that got automated with Apple Script.
Amazing.
That's the power.
Yeah.
And that kind of production in video is not unusual.
Right.
There was a lot of color studios like Technicolor and people in Hollywood. Man, I'd go down there and visit those guys and they would be, or film scoring. You know, there's a lot of people that do film scoring. They automate processes.
You can't do it otherwise. This is what the promise of computing always was.
Yeah.
Was it would do the boring stuff for you. So,
yeah.
You know, and do it anything you did more than once, you should automate.
Right. You get speed, accuracy, consistent output, and scalability.
Yeah.
You can't scale by adding bodies. You have to automate.
The key, though, that makes this so interesting is people do that all the time on Linux and any other operating system, right? Writing shell scripts or Ruby scripts or Python scripts. The key here was that you could hook into not only the operating system, But all these applications that have a dictionary and have them all work together, that's a very beautiful, elegant system.
It's what saved Apple. There was many times during my early career when I saw that fact become a reality where the only reason Apple stayed in the company was because they had automated processes with AppleScript and they did not have another way to do that on any other
platform.
Showtime's
not going to say, okay, well, let's get 100 Windows machines. Sorry, they won't do that.
No.
Oh, well, I guess we'll get some more Macs.
There was like Simon & Schuster and a lot of big publishing companies that were all automated. And it was the Macs in the graphics divisions, their automations that basically kept Apple in the game, in the building, until they could turn around and start offering a richer environment and newer equipment and things like that. But automation plays a role for everybody, not only for big corporations, which totally automate what they do, but for smaller companies that are trying to be efficient, who handle a lot of video or tasks, and for individuals that just need a better way to do something easy on their devices.
Right.
Automation is for everybody. You know, Apple has a great idea with the everyone can code, but I would also say everyone can automate. You know, it's like the step in between that process.
Yeah.
Everybody can learn to automate, whether using Automator, whether using Workflow, whether using AppleScript, whatever, or JavaScript. Everybody can learn how to put these things together and make their own story and make their own tools.
All right. Sal Segoyan's our guest. I want to take a little break. I want to talk about, because that's all past. I want to talk about present and how we got to the present. With Sal Segoyan in just a little bit on Triangulation. Our guest today. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. If you're buying a house, biggest purchase you'll ever make, right? Biggest check you'll ever write. And for most of us, that's not going to be cash. You're going to get a mortgage, right? You're going to get a home loan. May I suggest Quicken Loans? The biggest, the best lender in the country. Number one in customer satisfaction. Year after year, 8 years in a row, according to J.D. Power, number one, but also number one in volume. They go hand in hand. They just recently took over from that big bank, which deserves to be knocked down a point or two, if you ask me. Last time we bought a house, we went through that big bank. You got to go to a banker, right? You got to put on a tie, a nice dress. You got to be pretend you're prosperous. The only people they lend money to are people who don't need the money, right? So you go in, absolutely, and they say, okay, boom, here's a big stack of papers to fill out, your loan application. Then you got to go to the attic. You got to call the bank. You got to get bank statements since 2010. And you got to do all the rigmarole. And in our case, Lisa and I, when we bought our house 4 years ago, it took literally not 1 month. We were going to go on a vacation a month. And we said, oh, we'll have this done. We want to buy this house. We'll have the house by the time we leave. No, we left. Went on a vacation. We're still there. Banks coming back to us saying, well, you need this. We need this. We're faxing stuff from a cruise ship. We're calling Lisa's sister and say, can you – the bank now, the bank wants this. It was a nightmare. We almost lost the house. 2 months later, we finally got the loan. But three days after we get back from the cruise, we got the loan. It's like, now you do it. This is the way we're doing it next time. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. It's aptly named. It's as fast as a rocket. And it's entirely online. No more going to the bank. No more filling out a long application. You just go to rocketmortgage.com/triangulation. Answer a few simple questions. Because Quicken Loans is the biggest lender in the country, they've got relationships with all the financial institutions. So as soon as you say, yeah, I give you permission, they'll go out. They'll get your income, your assets, your credit. They'll verify all that information. Now, the first thing you get is what they call, and you get this within 10 minutes, it's qualified approval. That you can get at the open house and show the realtor, yep, we're good for this. Within 24 hours, they'll verify all of this stuff, and they will give you then verified approval. Now, that's awesome. That basically says you've got the money. It makes you a cash buyer now. When the seller, this is a problem. When you know, it's a seller's market. If you go in and say, hey, we want your house, but we're going to get the loan, so it's contingent on getting, no. If you go in there and say, no, we already got verified approval, you're right at the front of the line. That's like saying, well, we'll write you a check right now. Now, this is the next thing that's great. It takes a lot of the anxiety out of home buying because right now rates are starting to tick up. That means there's pressure as you shop around to buy right now because if you wait a month, if you don't buy this house, rates could go up. It costs you thousands of dollars more. So that's why Rocket Mortgage has created, this is all new, exclusive Rate Shield approval. They lock up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. You get up to 3 months without any chance. The rates will not go up. If the rates go up in the real world, your rate stays the same. You're locked in for up to 90 days. And if the rates go down, your rate drops. So you win either way. It's the kind of thinking you'd expect from the world's best, America's anyway, best mortgage lender. I don't know if they're the world's best. They probably are. RocketMortgage.com/triangulation. Go there right now and get started. Now here's the law stuff, legal stuff I got to say. Rocket Mortgage stuff, you know, here. Rate shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. You don't have to remember that stuff. Just remember this. RocketMortgage.com/triangulation. Take all the stress, all the nervous making out of buying a new home and enjoy the process. Get that perfect house and up to 3 months to look for it. RocketMortgage.com/triangulation. We're talking to Sal Segoyan, who is a dear friend and a legend in the industry. The guy who brought us Automator, who helped so many companies automate their workflow, so many individuals with AppleScript. Do applications still have AppleScript dictionaries? Is that fairly common when a new application comes out on the Mac?
There's a lot of applications on the Mac that have scriptable dictionaries.
They do?
Yes. So it has Microsoft and Adobe products and Apple products.
It's not slipped into the dark ages of...
Oh, absolutely okay, not. AppleScript's, you know, it's a tool that people use, especially Apple. Apple does a lot of automation themselves, and I wouldn't be having my Command-D script down home scripting boot camp this year if AppleScript wasn't a vital and growing industry.
It's so you're absolutely still teaching, but at some point a couple of years ago, you and Apple parted company.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that? What happened?
Basically, Apple came to me and said that the position that I had wasn't being supported anymore. And
they canceled your job.
they canceled that job. And wow. I guess, you know, it's the decision that they made. They know. I really don't, you know, I can't speak for why they did something or what they do. You have to ask them about
that. Did you
want
to stay there the rest of your life? Would you have liked it?
You know, me, I wouldn't mind just keep pushing automation forever. And
you're like John the Baptist. You're like you're proselytizing. You're bringing the good word about automation.
Well, you know, there's a certain truth to it, Leo, is we all have our own little place in the world, our own garden. And like I said earlier, that my creed is that the power of the computer should reside in the hands of the one using it.
I so agree with you.
And that's been with me, and it's something that I feel I can make a contribution to society with.
Right.
That if I expand that truth and I share that truth with other people and I help them to experience the power and abilities through automation, then I'm making a contribution to the world, no matter how small it might
be. This is your mission.
This is very much like a mission.
And it's a, you know what? I celebrate it and thank you for it. I mean, it really is a great mission. Does the fact that this job no longer exists at Apple mean that Apple is less supportive of automation? Are they moving away from this?
I mean, you have to ask Apple about their intentions or everything, but if we look at what they're doing...
Well, that's the only way we can judge it.
Yeah, I'd say I see automation heavily in what they're doing with the on iOS with a purchase the workflow app, and now they're introducing Siri shortcuts, which are basically the automation now combined with voice.
I had
intents.
To laugh when I saw that. I thought, yeah. Oh yeah, good. They're getting rid of Sal in the OS 10, but they're putting it all in Siri. You could have been the king of automation on iOS. Is it the same kind of thing as OSA scripting?
No, there is not that scripting architecture. There is no underlying scripting architecture on iOS. I would have always loved to have Apple events over on iOS.
Is that for security, would you say?
Probably, because...
you don't want one application to tell another application to do something.
Well, they solved that problem on macOS, though. automation on macOS has a certain channels that it runs through, and it acts as the user. The user gives it the authority to do stuff on its behalf.
That's how all operating systems work. It only has the privilege level of the user.
Yes.
So if you're not acting as an administrator, or you haven't given an administrator password, it can't do anything dangerous. It can only do what you could do.
Yeah, the way that they designed when the automation team met the security team for the first time, it was an interesting experience.
Yeah, because security would like you to just not do any of this.
Security doesn't want anything to happen, and the automation team wants everything to happen.
Right.
So we came to the solution. Yvonne's team, remarkable individuals. They've done a
great job.
They're fantastic. Yeah. Came to the idea that we would have system processes like Automator Runner and the Script Monitor would run the automations, and they're handled by the system. And as long as the user puts those scripts in there, that's the user telling the operating system, I want to do this, so get out of the way. I'm approving this. An application can't put that script in there. An application, the user has to implement the script. And because the system's running the script and the user has implemented it, it has the authority to do whatever it
wants. That's a good compromise because it's my system. I'm the user.
Right.
You don't want an outside third party manipulating my system.
Right.
But as long as I say I want to do this, you should let the user do this. Although we are living in a world now where increasingly the user is a consumer, not a creator, and is not allowed to do anything.
Right.
That's worrisome.
So an application, if an application wants to control another application, it has to have an entitlement. It has to pre-ask for approval to do that.
That's like when you ask, can I look at location?
Yeah. And so then that application's given that. But from the user perspective of user automation, it's all based upon Leo's intent.
Right.
Leo put the script in there.
Right.
Leo is running it. Let's let Leo's script do what it needs
to
do. I
could see how a security guy might say, well, we don't want to let the users do that either because we don't trust the users. But at some point for a computer to be useful, you have to let the user do what they want.
Yes, and I think that what they've done with macOS is a great balance on that. And it's continuing with the new macOS on Mojave.
This is so cool.
Where now you can have automator workflows that actually become system extensions. And they can be run off the touch bar.
Let me show you this. Sal brought in a video. This is a touch bar widget.
This is a touch bar automator workflow that's taking the data from the table and making a pie chart in Keynote. Now I'm going to select a column of data, and I'm going to do the same thing.
This is on the touch bar. There's
a button
on the touch bar.
You can see that's the touch bar right there. If you put it in accessibility mode, you can record it like that. So in a couple seconds, I'm able to create a presentation using data from a spreadsheet split screen.
Let me show you that again.
Using automation on Mac OS Mojave. Using the touch bar. The touch bar is a useful, user-defined tool.
This is gonna change how I use the touch bar.
Oh, totally.
If the touch bar is scriptable,
yeah,
I'm gonna put a bunch of buttons on there to do what I want to do.
There you go. So if you have something that you like to do a lot, you can create an automator workflow that is saved as a touch bar quick action, they call it.
A quick action.
Yeah, quick action. So this tradition is carrying on. To answer your question, automation has a great future with Apple. I'm really excited by what's happening on iOS and what's happening on macOS, and I'm feeling a community come from that. I'm feeling excitement in the user community like I haven't seen since those early days. People are excited about the products.
See, this is part of the problem, though, is, of course, that there are two classes of users. There's users who want to do this, who are motivated to do this, who write scripts, who like to get under the hood, who want all the power of the computer. Mm. But especially now with iOS, there's a whole new class of users that want to do this. I don't want to do anything. I don't want to program. And I think actually it's interesting how Apple's handled this on iOS with Siri shortcuts, where Siri kind of suggests things that you do a lot. Oh, well, would you like me to make that a script in effect? It doesn't say that, but an action. But then with Workflow, which they purchased, they're going to have the capability for somebody like me to write our own stuff, too.
It, under one word, I mean, they've given it the title Series Shortcuts, but there's a lot going on there. Like you said, your actions in using the device can make suggestions that appear, that filter right. up and percolate. Right. So an application, if you're using my application and I see that you do something often, I can send this suggestion over to the queue and the right. operating system to say, hey, I can give you a shortcut for that.
Right.
Then in addition to that, you have this wonderful application workflow.
Which is going to be renamed with iOS 12
Series Shortcuts.
Right.
And it carries on the traditions that we established with Automator on the Mac, where it takes data as an input. Each action is a step in a recipe.
It looks a lot like an Automator
Very
script.
Much so.
So you have this flow. And the output of one unit then goes as the input to the next unit,
yes.
basically.
You're basically making an automation recipe where you have cut the carrots, cut the celery, right. cut the onions, mix together, heat, serve. And the material that's being processed is passed through this chain. That's what we established with Automator. And the workflow app has taken those ideas and those traditions and brought them to iOS for those same people you just talked right. about. For the people that are motivated that they see, I need a shortcut for this. I need an easier way to do this, but I don't want to write all this stuff. Well, they can figure it out with Siri Shortcuts, or Siri can say, hey, Leo, I see you're doing this right. a lot. Do you want right. me to automate that for right. you? And you go, yeah.
What's
so
great
Apple's
about this,
actually taken it another step.
Right. Yeah. And I like it because I think Apple found this as a solution for the issue with Siri of not being very smart, and but yet not wanting to make it smarter by spying on what I do.
Right.
So they handed off to third-party applications. And the applications know, Phil's Coffee knows that you buy this Mint Mojito every morning at 9.
Yeah.
And so since it knows that, it can interact with Siri. It also, which I'm thrilled about, encourages third-party application developers to start adding those capabilities.
Yes, absolutely. So if you can relate that to the concept, remember on the Mac we said applications have scripting dictionaries. So the application developer created this rich environment that you could tie to. Well, this is kind of like that on a lighter level where the application is now publishing these different points that Siri can connect into. But there is still a user that needs more.
Yeah.
There is always that type of user right. that needs the more advanced scripting. And that's why I'm excited by what I've been working with the Omni Group.
So Omni Group, who's really been one of the best app and application developers for
yeah.
Macintosh, with Omni Graffle and Omni Project and
Omni Outliner.
Outliner, which
Omni
is great.
Omni Graffle, Omni Plan.
Plan, that's the project.
And Omni
one, yeah.
Focus are their core products.
I love Omni Focus. It's one of
oh,
the best
yeah.
getting things done.
Personal management, yeah, and then yeah. for planning a project, Omni Plan is absolutely the essential tool.
So you're not an employee of them, but you've been working with them.
No, I'm not an employee, but I've been working with Ken and the guys.
It's a great team.
On
yeah.
implementing a cross-platform scripting solution for both iOS and macOS.
Let me show you some of this here. Which
so,
one?
Let me tell you what it is
okay,
first.
And then
before
explain
we
what we're going to see.
Yeah, and then I'll explain what you're going to see. So to find a common ground between the two platforms, they were very clever. They decided to work with core JavaScript that is part of WebKit. Since WebKit is
on
every Apple device,
yep.
there's this language, JavaScript, in there, core JavaScript, which they then took the strategy of exposing all the objects of the application like AppleScript does, you know, the document, the boxes, everything down the chain, to JavaScript, to core JavaScript. So their apps are scriptable. Right now, Omni Graffle and Omni Outliner are fully scriptable in the same kind of way that you do traditional scripting on macOS, but to JavaScript. And it works both platforms. So you can write a script in JavaScript for Omni Graffle, execute it on iOS, take the same script and run it on macOS,
oh,
and it's
that's
the same.
Great.
And another advantage is because they're using JavaScript, it implements and integrates with HTML and other applications. There's a lot of applications in iOS that are implementing the same strategy of JavaScript to do that. So let me show you a couple examples here. I'm going to do the Mac one first.
Heatmap iOS.
Mac OS.
Here it is.
Yeah. Okay, so we have split screen. I have a web page over here. I'm going to click a picture on the web page, and that's going to create a stencil in OmniGraffle. I'm going to do it twice on two different canvases there. So just the act of clicking that image, then I'm going to click the table, and the data from that table is going to get extracted and mapped
to JavaScript.
The objects. This is JavaScript Omni automation embedded in a web page, and now it's interacting with the document. So now that I have two examples, this is...
So basically a click of a button, and you were able to color each of these states on this US
with
map.
Data from a table.
From the table, the numbers,
on a web page.
Raw numbers in the data.
So this data is about how states get money back from the federal government over years. And you can see a 10-year period there between 2000 and 2013. And what I'm going to do is use that as a way of finding out important aspects about this over time. So now I have the two. You can see there.
You've labeled them. All
right. I've labeled them. And now OmniGraffle, which is a wonderful program, also has a presentation mode. So I can put this into presentation mode where I can dynamically go back and forth and watch this. So I can look at, okay, there's 2000. Ah, something changing in 2013. Notice down here in the central region of the country, all of a sudden it got really dark right around there. Yeah. That means they're taking more money from the federal government. Situation changed, and same up here. But look at this. All of a sudden, North Dakota changed. So I clicked the link. It takes me to the page, and I can see that the oil extraction boom is the reason that their economy was more prosperous.
This is all JavaScript using Apple Events.
This is not using Apple Events.
Sorry,
this
WebKit.
This is JavaScript based on the core JavaScript in WebKit that Omni is implemented, and I've implemented it to a web page. Now, here's the kicker. Let's do the same thing, but now on an iPad. So I'm going to drag out a split screen on an iPad, go to the same web page. I'm going to tap the same image and watch what happens. There's the script.
There's the JavaScript.
You can actually see the script that's running, and it does the same stenciling in OmniGraffle. This is OmniGraffle for iOS. There's the data coming across as JSON. You can see all the different objects. I'll add another canvas here. I'm going to do the same thing. I'm going to tap it, add a stencil. There's the script for that. Whoop. And now I'm going to go down, grab the data from the other table. There's the JSON data for that, and I'm going to heat map it. That's incredibly powerful.
Yes.
That could be a corporate internal website that I go to. It could be
dashboard.
A financial thing for the SEC. It could be, you know, just the idea that I can have stuff in a web page and tapping that interacts with my document in my application shows the potential power that Omni has opened up here.
That's really exciting.
And so currently they have OmniGraffle and Omni Outliner are fully scriptable like this. They're planning to do Omni Plan and Omni Focus the same way, and then I believe that they're going to be releasing the frameworks to other developers.
Well, that's the question. Will other companies do the same thing? Because that would be a great lingua franca.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, well, there's software now like the Drafts app.
Right.
Have you used
Love Drafts. Oh, I live in Drafts.
It's really robustly supports AppleScript, and you can talk between Drafts and Omni. All the Omni apps go back and forth and transfer data between them.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
oh,
because nice. This whole thing is designed around the core JavaScript architecture, and it uses a URL messaging instead of Apple Events, they're able to pull this kind of thing off. And I think that this shows the potential that automation has on mobile devices. I'm really thrilled about that. And I think once we add in the Siri shortcuts, you're going to see more and more people switch to this. And you know what I think is going to happen for Apple? I know Apple wants to increase sales of their devices. They would like to see more iOS devices in the enterprise.
Right.
And I think that automation is going to help give them that penetration in the enterprise that they're looking for. I think more companies are going to go, I can take this device and I can automate these processes. I'll take some iPads and do that with that. And I think the customers you mentioned, the people that are using their phone who just want to automate processes, are going to be thrilled with the new Siri shortcuts. And the professionals who are using macOS and being able to put things on a touch bar, this is a great time for automation. I think it's definitely a rebirth and a continuation of philosophies and strategies that we laid out years and years ago.
So you found a place to stand outside of Apple where you can support people, you can promote these technologies in much the same way you did inside of Apple. As long as Apple keeps providing the support in the OS,
yeah,
you can do what you're doing. Now, if you go to macOS
automation.com,
this is Sal's site, by the way.
That's a conglomerate site there. This is a portal site into like
all
six
the other
sites.
Yeah. Yeah. Like are these all your sites?
Yes, they're all mine. There's the Omni Automation site is down lower.
Okay. Wow.
On the left-hand side, omni-automation.com. You can click that and go to all the different examples. I have a thing for the Command D conference.
Yeah, tell me about that, because you started doing that last year, right? And you're doing your second Command D in a month. A little more than a month.
In October.
Sorry, I didn't mean to scare you. 2 months.
In October. I'm working with Ray Robertson, who's a master of scripting and instruction. Ray's a very calm and patient instructor, and he's very knowledgeable about scripting and teaching scripting. And we're doing it in Cartersville, Georgia, outside of Atlanta. It's called the Command D Down Home Scripting Boot Camp. And it's going to be 3 days of hands-on instruction. The first day is going to be just the fundamentals. All you have to do is remember just to show up. And the food's going to be taken care of. You don't have to worry about anything. And the second day, we're going to go over the basics. And then the third day, we're going to get into some specific applications as well. But I've always enjoyed teaching people and watching the light bulb go off.
Yeah,
I know you experience the same thing yourself.
You
love it when you see the change in people and they go, oh my gosh, I get that. And so last year we had a conference where we had people attending the conference in Santa Clara. This year we've decided to go focus on the hands-on aspect and get people in the room where we can actually teach them the scripting for 3 days.
So it's kind of scripting boot camp.
It's all Apple script for 3 days. They're going
to... I should go to that.
Have an indoctrination.
Like
we'd love to have you down there.
I would love to go. And you've put the videos from last year's Command D.
Yeah, there's a link there for 2017 videos. And if you click those, you can...
Are these free? You can look
at them.
Oh, nice.
There's my lectures on the scripting triumvirate. I did an hour and a half presentation last year on all aspects about the scripting and Automator. All the advanced things about Automator that people didn't know about, using workflow variables and things, it's up there. And there's sessions from all of our instructors up there, like Brett and Shelley.
Nice.
Yeah.
This is all free. And this
it's all free. Yeah. Just
CMDDCONF.com.
Yep. CommandDConf.
Wow. Look at that.
And David Sparks, a fun session with on using the workflow app.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Allison Sheridan, code-free automation.
Yeah, I love Allison. She has an opinion, and you're going to find it out.
Yeah,
it's great. Yeah.
And Brett Terpster. Well, that's a great lineup from last year, and I'm sure it'll be equally interesting this year. That sounds like a lot of fun.
I have multiple clients I work with, one of which is Apple. I work as a contractor with Apple.
Do you feel like you're getting the inside information from Apple? Are they kind of helping you understand what's going on, or...
Not really.
No,
I don't want to know. I don't ask. I'm very conscious about my role and my position. And
but you must have been thrilled to see Siri Suggestions and see the acquisition of workflow.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because that shows a commitment to scripting and automation.
Oh, yeah. Ari and Conrad and the guys from the workflow app, absolutely brilliant people who are motivated to do the right thing.
Did you know about workflow before it came out?
Oh, sure.
They talked to you about it.
Yeah.
It wasn't a surprise.
No.
I was surprised because I didn't think you could. I thought you can't do that on iOS.
They're very clever guys.
That's smart. It's all URL.
It was URL based, but now that they're actually part of Apple, you can get access to the things
that's
you couldn't get
access
to before.
Intrigues me. That workflow could potentially, as shortcuts, be incredibly useful. This could eventually become Apple events for iOS, basically.
I don't know if it has that level of granularity. I think there's always room to have like a really granular thing like Apple events. I would love to see that. I think what Omni's doing by exposing their applications to JavaScript shows that level of granularity.
Does WebKit have some deep hooks into the operating system, or it's got to be fairly limited?
It has some. You know, a lot of that is sandboxed.
Right.
You know, so you don't, it's not like on Mac OS X where you can do shell script and talk directly down into low level. Yeah. Or you can use
you
Apple
could
script
delete your hard drive
C
if you
and,
wanted to on OS X.
I guess if you really wanted to do damage, you could hurt yourself.
You could hurt you. It's, yeah. Hey, I look for a tool
I
that's
rarely
good
ever
to hurt
I
myself.
Don't think I've ever heard anybody doing that, but
no.
I suppose you could.
But the point is, I need enough power that I
mean,
I could.
You could take your Tesla and run it off a bridge if you want
but
to.
But I'm not gonna.
But I don't usually hear people doing that.
No, I just want to know that I can if I. I don't want any artificial constraints on what I can
do. You're a Mac guy like me.
I am too.
I love having that freedom and the ability to work with a Mac, and I just love it. And now that I can actually use the touch bar for something, dude, I'm all over this.
Yeah, I was not a fan of the touch bar.
Oh, I'm a fan of the touch bar now.
Yeah, you can put a series of buttons that do stuff that you use that you want. And I'm going to have to find out more about that one. That's very interesting.
I got a bunch already written for you.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Will that be on the website?
Well, I'll be talking about it once it comes out as an official release.
Oh, okay.
Then I'll have pages with them for download.
Okay. And if you can use JavaScript to do this stuff, can you use some of the... There's a lot of tools now around JavaScript, type-safe JavaScript with TypeScript. I'm a Lisp kind of guy. I like ClojureScript.
Yeah.
I presume that I could do the same thing with ClojureScript because it outputs standard JavaScript. So
yeah, there's many ways into this.
Yeah.
There's many ways into it. And since JavaScript like a string-based, text-based language,
right.
It works like in the web pages,
right.
Which is text-based.
Is it a DOM? Is it using the DOM? Or?
Well, the way that I did that is I used JavaScript on the page to talk to the table to extract the data, and then that the JSON gets inserted into the Omni automation JavaScript, which
and
gets
it can
executed
understand JSON.
As a URL.
Okay.
Omni grabs that, parses the whole thing, executes, puts that out into a script and executes it. And it all happened when I just clicked. You know, you saw
amazing.
The click.
Yeah.
It's just that momentary thing, all of that happened. Yeah. The data came from the web page, got translated and put over there.
Very nice.
So it's a brave new
Automator
world.
Still on OS X?
Yes.
And it absolutely. Will be in Mojave?
It is the touch bar. Creator.
That's how you're doing it. In
yeah, you go into Automator now. You now have, instead of a system service, they now call it a touch bar quick action template.
But it looks just like Automator.
It is an Automator. It's an Automator workflow that gets saved as a system extension.
Interesting.
So,
okay, sure. I understand that.
Yeah. Now, once it's in there for the Finder or for the touch bar, you can have Automator. It has more life than it's had
before.
And you
have no reason to think they're going to abandon that.
Oh, no.
There's too many people use it.
Well, it's just too useful, and Apple uses it.
Right.
You know, how do you think Apple does the work that they need to do? How do you think that they produce video
they probably automate
and content?
Builds, and, they probably do all this stuff.
Oh, yeah, they do a lot of automation.
Yeah.
You know, part of my job as a product manager, like I said, is I work with lots of different teams.
Right.
I'd be over at retail helping them automate a process or with iTunes. You know, all the audio that gets processed for high quality for the iTunes store is done with Apple script.
It'd have to be. You wouldn't want to do that by hand.
No. And you want to give customers the solution that's just, hey, drag this onto this, right? And so there's automation throughout everything that Apple does as a corporation. And every other corporation is the same as Apple.
Right.
They automate these processes.
Right.
They don't do that stuff by hand. And for that reason alone, you keep automation in the operating system. And now I think automation is going to be a competitive advantage for AppleScript. I think they're going to sell more iPads to the enterprise and education because they can automate it on iOS now. And I think they're going to sell more Macs because they've integrated another step into the automation story on Mac OS Mojave.
Right.
So I think this is financially going to do a great thing for Apple.
So Craig, if you're listening, Tim, keep it in there. It's good for you. It'll sell more hardware, right?
That's absolutely right.
It's really great stuff. Sal, I'm glad you're doing so well. You're very, very busy, which is a good thing.
I can always use more if other companies out there are interested.
If you need automation, you go to Command D Conference or you go to macosautomation.com.
Yep.
Is it Mac OS 10? Mac OS 10 automation.
Or either one, Mac OS or Mac OS 10 automation.
Smart, you got them both because the names change.
Yes.
But the page stays the same.
Scriptable
Swift apps. I think that's interesting.
Yeah.
Ah.
And I just recently wrote a template for Xcode for creating Swift Automator actions. So if you want to write your own automator action, you can do it in Swift.
Anything you could do in Swift, you could make an automator action.
Yeah.
That's pretty powerful.
I'd say so.
Wow.
And now that it can become part of the operating system through a system extension with Mojave, wow, there's even more reason to write the custom automator stuff.
There really isn't anything it can't do.
No.
So on Windows, they try to have this kind of automation. They PowerShell. They try to give you some access to this. But there's no, but this is really one of the real strengths of Mac OS.
There's
a stack from the very bottom all the way up to the very top of programmability that is unparalleled.
Automation is really about the heart of Apple. It's what Apple stands for, of empowering the user.
I don't know if that's widely known, but it's...
That's what attracted me to the company.
Yeah.
And that's, I know for a fact, that's what Steve believed in.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, creating tools to change the world.
Right.
No matter, you can meet the crustiest Apple employee and you scrape the surface here and they all believe that same story that they're there to change
the world.
And automation is a way that you change the world for people in a positive way.
Yes, I agree. 100%.
It fits the Apple story.
And you know, if they're going to really push iOS, they got to bring it to iOS.
They have to. Yeah.
That's clear.
Yeah.
That's what it says right here on the site. The power of the computer should reside in the hands of the one using it. And this guy's done more to put that power in people's hands than anybody I know. And I'm so great to see you again and welcome you back. And if you want to have some fun, go back to the very first episodes of Mac Break that Sal taught me how to use this Automator and Apple Script. And man, that's awesome.
Oh,
you're going to do a coupon? Are you going to do a coupon?
That's right. Man, we can't let that go.
No, don't do a coupon.
Because
that's
you're
too
you.
Nice. That's too good.
We
for
have
the Command D conference?
For the Command D conference, we set up a special coupon. If you want to go to Command D in October, we have a coupon with triangulation that will give you the early bird price right now.
Because it's not early anymore.
Because it's no longer early. Yeah. So it'll give you $200 off the price of the conference.
That's great, Sal. Thank you.
And
who's going to be at the conference besides the great Sal Segoyan?
Well, Ray Robertson is going to be hosting the conference with me. And we'll both be doing hands-on teaching together in the classroom there. And we have a wide variety of people. We have somebody from NASA showing up. We have school teachers showing up.
I love seeing what people are doing with automation. It's to me very, very
interesting. Oh, yeah.
And you learn a lot.
Oh, totally.
You say, you can do – that's a good idea.
Yeah.
I could use that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great.
And in addition, I'm going to put a plug in for a couple of the other conferences I'm doing, too, this year. Mac Sysadmin in Sweden, I'll be doing that conference.
Fun.
And I'll be doing the Jamf conference. I'll be speaking on the automation conference.
Jamf is
there.
A sponsor. We
and
love
then
Jamf.
One of my favorite is Mac Tech in,
always fun.
In L.A. because the food is so good. Neil has figured that one out. He's got it down. Thank you, Neil. Love the food. And I get to speak there, too. And so I can tell you firsthand that the automation is it's doing well, it's growing, it's prospering.
Good.
People are interested
Thank
in
God.
Automation Good. Again.
It's so important.
It totally is.
And it's so powerful. And if you haven't played with it on your Mac, play with it. And if you haven't played with Workflow yet, you still can. And in about a month when we all get shortcuts on iOS 12,
yeah,
that's going to really, I think that's going to change things dramatically. People totally. Start seeing Siri suggestions pop up and then maybe just delve a little bit into what they can do with shortcuts. I think there's going to be some really interesting stuff.
Have you noticed the websites are starting to pick up on that? Here's a 10 shortcut ideas stuff.
They
Have you noticed that?
Not
it's
yet,
like
but
the whole
good.
Community is starting to
So that's
to
happening?
Census.
I'll have yeah. to go out and find yeah. some of those. Yeah. That sounds great. That really... It is. It's exciting.
Once You're going to have a lot of it do. On your shows, too.
Yeah, we've... You know, it's funny because I've shown people how to use Automator, and I think sometimes people go, that's complicated. That's complicated. Or worse, Workflow. Oh, that's complicated. I don't know. But I think we should do... Maybe we'll do... Maybe we'll start doing an Automator tip of the week or something like that. Maybe I'll get you to
I think
come
you're
going to
do a series
that,
shortcut tip of the week.
How
I think
about
that's
that?
How it's going to start.
How about that?
I think it's going to
All
absolutely
right.
start that way.
We'll start doing
and
that.
And you're going to have built into your website, people will be able to download to, these and
you
start
can click
using
it and
them.
Use
and,
it.
You know, it's going to be a Twit thing. Do you have the Twit shortcuts?
Not
why
yet.
Don't you have the Twit
why,
shortcuts?
Why don't we? You know what I want to do is as a progressive web app. So this is, in a way, this fits into that. That's the idea that you go to a website, there's some workers on iOS or on Mac or on Windows that support it, that an offline version of the website. So it mm-hmm. downloads, it caches, mm-hmm. it uses workers to do a lot of the things, and it can even work offline. Mm-hmm. And that basically means you can go to our website and get a Twit podcast app. There's no reason not, with JavaScript enabling, there's no reason I couldn't be doing a lot more interesting things.
Totally.
Yeah, that's really... Thank you, Sal. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you.
It's so great to see you again. We shouldn't make it so long next time. Come back soon.
I'll come to dinner and stay all winter.
Well, our reservation is we're going to have dinner. I'm going to try to beat Neil on the food here. We do triangulation usually every Friday, about 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, 2200 UTC. It's called triangulation not because... There's three of me. No, there's one of me, one of our guests, and one of you. You're the third side of the triangle if you join us in the chat room during the live broadcast at irc.twit.tv. But if you can't watch live, don't worry. We make on-demand versions of everything available, audio or video. For this show, it's twit.tv/TRI. You can also subscribe in your favorite podcast application and get it automatically. Or better yet, write an Automator script. This should just pull them all down. That's the way to do it. We'll put a button on the website. Download everything. Oh, Cashfly will be on the phone. What's going on? What's going on? Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time on Triangulation. Bye-bye.